Hi, thanks for coming. That's the end of this year's Mixology Festival. Liz Gehring Dance Company. Ursula Scher Video. Leila Bourdieu on cello. I'm Michael Schumacher. I did the sound, the computer sound. So we have a Q&A, right? So we're gonna. Yeah. Are you the Q?
All right, well, just for the purpose of a beautiful recording, I will talk directly into the microphone. My name is David Weinstein. I am the Director of Special Projects at Roulette, and some 25 years ago, I launched this festival. I think. They tell me so. I don't really remember. And so I have seen quite a few of these. I've curated a few, and it's always interesting to see different approaches to what was originally called explorations in, I think, not explorations, I don't know. New and unusual technologies that incorporate sound. That was the first definition. Now it's like sound and media and sound and video. But it's supposedly new technologies. So here's a question. How many people came tonight because you are attracted to things that incorporate dance? Just curious. So it's like, that's more than half. Well, as opposed to like, how many people came because they read that we have a sexy 12-channel sound system?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we love you. So that's not so many. And how about video fans? People, oh yeah, okay. So it's dance that pulled you here more than anything else. Of course, there's a lot of competition tonight. There's the Next, and there's Phil Niblock, and stuff like this. Some of the Next collaborators are in the building, are they? Is Shelley still here? No. I think oh yeah, because she's supposed to be, they're playing like at Issue. She'd go to Issue after this. I think they're going to like midnight. So we've lost everybody. Okay, we'll talk about Ursula. So, I've seen a bunch of Ursula stuff, some of which was durational pieces. So here's a question for you. Whose idea was it to make this today a durational piece? It was a four-hour piece. Was that your idea?
No, it actually was Michael.
And how common is it for you to do a durational piece? Like,
I've been doing quite a lot, almost more
times.
About the same. But often, yeah.
So for you, it's common, but it's not always durational.
Yes,
long things. How about you, Mr. Welcome. This is Mr. Schumacher. Yeah. So Ursula says it was your idea to do a durational piece today.
I think it was.
And how often in your career have you done durational pieces? Are they regular, unusual, always?
I've done a few. When I had my gallery, I'd do them pretty regularly. They would be generally 6 hours. I called them room pieces, and it's a similar multi-channel thing with live players. This is since Liz and I used to do like dance sound installations, I think we would go 3, 4, maybe 5 hours. As a duo, back in the 90s, I guess. And but this is the first time we've done that since then. And this is.
There was a long break.
Yeah, for the dance.
Because this is really, I really wanted to ultimately ask Liz about this, because that's...
Yeah, she's recovering.
Yeah,
she's
yeah. So...
She did the most physical work. She,
so this is really ridiculous, because I know all of you at least a little bit, but I have no idea which one was Liz.
Oh, yeah.
Which one was Liz?
Which one? Blonde, shortish hair? Woman?
Blonde, shortish hair.
So that you got two women, one had dark hair and one had light
hair. One had blonde pigtails.
Yeah.
That's not Liz.
Claire. That's Claire.
Okay. No, okay. Just curious. Claire. Yeah, Claire was wonderful. They were all wonderful. Okay, so I really wanted to ask her about the durational thing, because that's for, they're working really hard.
But, yeah.
So here's the other question that, that came up like week after week after week since this was announced. People ask me, should I come at the beginning? Should I come in the middle? Should I come to the end? I asked Ursula this the other day, and she said, it doesn't matter. Does it matter?
Well, I can't help quoting Godard. The piece did have a beginning and a middle and an end, but not in that order. Okay, so you could have tried to guess which one. I think it does matter. It's 4 hours is a long time, and the dance was a one-hour piece that repeated. So, the music was not repeating, so it was different. But you know, it goes in waves, and I would say that there are moments throughout. I think for me, it sort of peaked. It was going quite well from about 7:30 to maybe. Well, actually, it picked up again at the end for me. But there was some really nice stuff going on between 7:30 and 8:30, and.
Which now I have to quote Satie, who said to Debussy after something, like Debussy said, did you like my piece? And Satie said, I really liked the part that came at 8:15.
Yeah, which was measure 9,801.
Why do you like durational stuff? Why do you guys like the durational challenge?
I mean, for me, the durational stuff came out of a process creating structures that were, derived from certain algorithms. And what the duration does is explore the ramifications of the algorithms. So as the piece goes on and on and on, you're hearing potentially different combinations of things, and so it's really just it comes out of the way that I compose. It's necessary, really. If I want to know what this piece is going to sound like in 6 hours, I have to do it for 6 hours, and that's actually interesting to me because of the way that it's built.
Is this because as much about how you're listening as to what materials you're choosing?
Well, after
listen 5 hours? After 5 or 6 hours, you're listening in a different way.
Well, it's different in a concert, like more or less concert situation, than I do a lot of things that are designed really for living spaces. So in that case, you're moving in and out of concentrated listening, different states of listening, things like that.
Did you say living spaces?
Yeah, like a home. Living room.
You do pieces in a home.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so then the, okay.
Does so anybody want this in their home?
All right, where's the mic? Give your mic back. All right, so here's, you missed the really good stuff at the beginning.
Of course.
But Michael tipped part of your hand. Is a welcome, by the way. This is the choreographer dancing person. So we don't know each other. She and I have never met before.
Just met.
So, Michael said it was a 1 hour piece that repeated. Mm-hmm. But I saw about 2 hours of this, and I didn't notice. Of course, I suck at understanding movement practice anyway. So, it wasn't a 1 hour piece that repeated four times.
Yes.
Really.
Correct.
So, because it really was, I mean, they were obviously very carefully choreographed parts,
right.
And then there were components that sort of interlocked.
I mean, there was maybe a few differences each time, but mostly it was the same. You know, it was a loop.
So was that so is that very satisfying to do it four times over 4 hours?
I don't know. I guess you should ask them.
But did anybody do 4 hours? Did anybody here make the 4 hour? Oh yeah, there you go.
Oh, to watch
the Crusoe.
I don't think that was the purpose. It wasn't. The purpose wasn't to be duration. The purpose was it was an installation.
Right.
So you could have come for. Seen it for 10 minutes, I think. I mean, I don't know, in this context, it might have been hard to leave or enter, but it wasn't intended to be looked at for 4 hours or even 1 hour necessarily.
I think we all know that.
Okay,
all
right, good.
Yeah. But
just to be clear.
But we have been using the word durational a lot here, so I should say that it was an good because you called it a dance installation. Or you, the group
right,
you
when
did.
And the idea being that it was an indeterminate amount of time that the audience could look at what was happening. It wasn't designated to be usually in a regular sort of proscenium situation or more typical view. It's a certain amount of time, and most of the audience hopefully will stay.
Okay, so then. So we've sort of covered this concept of why a durational or an installation piece, and we've kind of talked about structure a little bit enough. But now I'm kind of interested in vocabulary. Let's start with Ursula. Ursula, how did you select your materials for this, and how did you limit yourself in what you were going to show? Because I know that you can absolutely swallow a space. If you want to, I've seen you do it. I've seen you do swallow a space twice this size with images, but today you chose not to. But aside from that, just how did you make your decisions about this one?
I mean, for me, it was ideally, I don't know if we succeeded, but ideally each of the three elements have the same weight, and it's very hard to compete with dance because a live body is huge. The video could be as big as you want. The live body is probably, if you looked at the audience most of the time, people were looking at the dancers and maybe they caught a bit of video. So it was kind of challenging, and I maybe would do some things different because I fear my material is very subtle, and I don't know if people took the time to find the subtlety in that, because there was always a dance, or very often a dance, where you can always hear. So it's definitely, we have the harder time with each other in that way, or just like, yeah, the two elements, because both are visual, and both have rhythm, and both, I mean, it's similar and very different. Yes, I can make something huge, but I fear that even if in relationship to my huge image, the live body is here, that's what draws. And I don't think it only had to do that maybe with more of a dance audience, that probably maybe somebody who makes video themselves, they concentrated a bit more on the video and maybe could blur out the dancers, but probably the other people maybe don't really know what I did so much.
So it's kind of a scale thing. You wanted to match.
It's interesting, yeah. I mean, I had some ideas of if we would have the money, what we could do, maybe.
All right, I'm going to go to Michael second, just because,
on that note,
again, I'm curious about Liz's answer, but so I'm going to save it. So you, sir, 12 channels, 97,354,212 sounds. So how did you pick your sound, your palette for this thing?
Well, this is a piece. That I've been working on with a portable sound system. It's a system that has small speakers, and I can set it up quickly and perform with it. And it's a computer program using Macs, the software Macs. And I improvise, but the improvisation is an interaction with the algorithms of the software. So. I mean, my you know, I'm feeling it out. As far as the sounds, I mean, the great abundance of sounds. There are a lot of sounds in the piece. This is just a choice that I made quite a while ago to kind of try to saturate space with sounds. And the idea, if you're familiar with this concept of reduced listening, the Pierre Schaeffer idea of relating sounds. I'm sort of trying to strip the sounds of, well, sort of strip them of their associations, but also to use those associations and create relationships between the sounds. So some of those relationships might be pitch, rhythmic based, sort of more musical kinds of relationships, but other sounds might evoke things, evoke objects or memories or things like that. And I'm just very interested in what happens when you push the limits of really comprehension in terms of what we can absorb. And this is a kind of counterpoint for me of moving, hoping that the mind of the listener will sort of connect the dots and create the structure or the form or the adventure or the experience through these very multifaceted relationships.
Thank you. So Liz, I have a feeling, maybe I'm wrong, that stripping associations might be a common denominator between you and Mr. Schumacher, with whom you have worked for quite a long time. There are some things that were a little bit humorous, and sometimes things that are a little bit sad, but always when someone's left alone on the stage and they are standing still, it can be like a little bit sad. But I have a feeling that there wasn't really anything, to you, it wasn't anything about this was either funny or sad or really emotional. It was
I'm crying now.
Well, you're hurting now. Stripping associations, how do you respond to that concept?
I guess it's more on a physical level, just thinking of movement patterns and just, we're all geared to look at movement a certain way and sort of how we anticipate movement having beginning, middle, and end, or a certain phrasing, or a certain dynamic. And for me, it's about trying to get away from what is comfortable or predictable or part of my heritage or and that's something about working, like when Michael, when we started this, he gave us this structure where there was three, dancer one, dancer two, dancer three, and that they all came in cues with the video. So did you explain this already?
No.
So when the screen is black, if that's dancer one, I don't know. The screen is black, they're moving. When the image comes on, they exit. And to me, that was kind of interesting, taking a sort of external structure and putting it on how normally I have my own way of structuring something. And that's a good way of getting out of familiar patterns, I think. And then we would deviate from that when I felt like I had had enough of that or it was time to do something else. I think that for me, it's really, all the movement has some connotations or has some symbolism, or there's relationships on stage that are happening, or they evoke something, or conjuring, but it's really about how the movement is executed and what's happening in the body and the timing. And they do, I can sort of maybe attach some words to that or some literal meaning, but it's really a very physical really trying to have movement just exist for movement's sake, I guess. In all its very intricate ways, slow, fast, blah, blah, blah. And I guess I'm trying to answer your question about what you were asking me. Stripping, yes. Well, just that I guess a lot of dance you would see certain steps or combinations that are kind of familiar to us or maybe mean something in our collective history, and trying to separate or remove that. So you're looking at something, you're not connecting it to how maybe another, you would originally have understood it.
And the timing for the video was the same. I didn't just come in and out when I felt I had.
Yeah, there was a structure.
Panel was, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna open it up to questions. I just wanted one quick thing. Leila Bordroy was wonderful, played the cello, the voice, and the three dancers. Whose names
are? The three dancers are drinking beer or.
I hope so.
And maybe Hank's, something stronger.
Somewhere. Don't be afraid of Hank's Saloon across the street. It's a friendly place.
Oh, I heard about that.
We've only heard about one stabbing there. Say the names of the three people.
Claire Westby, Brandon Colwis, and Forrest Hershey.
Yeah, they were beautiful. Okay, so let's ask questions, and then we'll all go drink at Hank's. If you have it. If you don't, we'll just say goodnight. Anybody? Did I do a good job asking them? I'm not looking for compliments. Just I'm like, did I satisfy your desires of curiosity about how this was made enough? We have a question. Yay. How did you decide to only have one screen of the dancers'
you
didn't, legs?
You only saw one screen. There were three screens of dancers' legs. One was there and one was here, which you probably couldn't see from there. So each dancer had...
Each dancer has their own TV.
Yes, exactly.
So there were three dancers and three separate feeds to three separate monitors. There's a lot of playback going on in this room.